one of the things companies forget about, they have a lot of learning, they have a lot of health and wellness and how are you checks and Qualtrics net promoter scores and all of these bits and pieces. But one of the things that they haven't done that we've started to see is tell you, hey, take a moment and take stock of your life. Where are you? Where do you want to be? And how do we help you get there?
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. We tell the stories of people who are defining the future of work. Our guests walk the tightrope, away from meaningless toil, and towards work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell, and the insights that they provide, will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. This week marks 3 months of pandemic-caused business disruption and the emergence of a major inflection point affecting the future of work. Forward-thinking companies that had to furlough large numbers of workers are engaging their cast-offs to encourage them to develop new skills and to find jobs at other companies. Enterprises that value their alumni, like retirees but also furloughed workers, are using social media platforms to keep their engagement strong. Doing so allows companies to entice some of their former employees to new roles in the company as full-time employees or as independent contractors. Leading this alumni engagement revolution is James Sinclair. His company, Enterprise Alumni, enables companies to engage their alumni in meaningful ways, to keep the value of their talent investment strong, and to help people build lives doing meaningful work. Our conversation is fun, and it covers a lot of important topic areas, including how the riots happening across America are radically affecting corporate work culture. We recorded our conversation earlier this week on Zoom. James St. Clair, welcome to the Tightrope.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it, Dan.
Well, my pleasure. So you are the chief executive of Enterprise Alumni. What is that, and what value does it provide to companies and professional talent?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. It's a great kind of opener of why am I here and what are we talking about?
Indeed.
So Enterprise Alumni focuses on the post-employee experience. So if you think about it, organizations spend a lot of money recruiting, trying to find those perfect candidates. They spend even more money on retention, health, wellness, all the conversations around retention. And then when you leave, it's, well, high five and some cupcakes and good luck with your life, if that. And so what we've recognized is leaving is inevitable. People will go from multiple jobs, and there is a benefit of organizations maintaining a relationship with these former employees that they invested so much time, energy, and money into. And so we do the alumni management for large organizations, helping them drive recruiting, referrals, brand advocates, sales, whatever the business motive might be.
Well, this has got to be impacted a lot since March when millions of Americans were furloughed. Just to tee up for our audience, unemployment for April topped out near 15%. I actually think it's probably a lot more than that. Millions of workers are furloughed, and the relationship between them and their employer or former employer is kind of hanging in the balance. The severance that they had may feel like they can never go back, but with this platform, it sounds like just because you were severed or furloughed doesn't mean you can't come back. So based on that, can you explain what's going on with your platform and why managers are using it to stay engaged with their, for lack of a better term, cast off talent?
Yeah. So obviously everything has changed in the last couple of months in terms of this must have ability to maintain a connection to these people furloughed or laid off, primarily because it wasn't the company's choice, as in they didn't choose to do this because people were underperforming. They did it because of market conditions. And so the conversation is these people are being laid off. These people are being furloughed. We need to make sure we have a channel to communicate with them, to provide them information, value. We have one customer that extends all of their learning, all of their online courses to these people who've been laid off with a very strict message of use this time to upskill, use this time to learn new talent. We have another customer who's identified 10 new skills that have come up in the past 60 days that they weren't even looking for before that are very trainable. Think about online conferencing, Zoom, all of these collaborations. So essentially what these companies are saying is, let's maintain a connection, whatever that might mean. Let's see if we can provide you some value, maybe help you find your next role or bring you back. We have another customer that's going through all of their retirees right now and asking a very simple question. Would you come back for project-based work? Because when we need to scale up very quickly, we're going to need people who understand our business, understand our tools, and can get going very, very quickly. And we don't have the time to source from the internet, essentially.
What you just said about project-based is really interesting to me, because I think what's going to happen out of this tsunami that we're dealing with is that a lot of full-time people are going to transition to project-based work. There'll be 1099s. And it may seem like a bother at first, but I think a lot of people are going to like it. What are your thoughts on that?
I think a lot of people are already part-time. They just do the hours of full-time. There's a lot of people that have multiple gigs, that have side projects, other things they're interested in, even their passion projects. You know, you have to think about people that work on a passion project in their garage or home. That's a second job to a certain extent. So I think all we're going to see is the formalization of who really cares, full-time, part-time, whatever. Are you the best person for the role, and can you perform and can you deliver? So kind of the metrics for judging success are no longer going to be, you know, FTE versus PTE.
It sounds to me like your clients are really leveraging lifetime value vis-a-vis their talent. Would you agree with that?
I think that's a great way to put it. And I think the companies don't have a choice. I think it's a very, there's two views. One is a very fiscal position, which says, hey, we've invested this enormous amount of money in our people. It would be stupid just to let that walk out the door and not maintain some connection. But the other is you see a very human connection. I mean, we have some amazing quotes from customers and quotes from companies. One company I love, PayPal, they say, we want to be known as a great place to be and a great place to be from. And I think that is a great representation of an organization that just recognizes lifetime value is about a relationship, period.
How are people, talent, I should say, relating to this new paradigm that you're dealing with, where they're cast off suddenly and they feel crappy, but now they're being perpetually engaged by their former employer to perhaps come back in some capacity? How does that feel to people?
So to some people, the question is kind of, what do I get out of it? And that's usually the first question. Why would I maintain a relationship with my former employer? Either because I was laid off, furloughed, or because I voluntarily left to go get a different or a better or whatever job that might be. And that really starts with how companies are engaging their people, whether it's around events, networking, mentoring, learning, all of these things that people associate with their prior organizations. People do have an affinity to the places they've worked with for, you know, more than a minute, essentially. So we see a lot of companies use it for their volunteering programs, for their ERG extensions. But the key is, what can we do to help you? And one of the things we've really seen recently is a lot of our customers, fortunately, unfortunately, have a lot of customers that have furloughed a lot of their employees, and we're seeing them do really innovative things. One of the things one of our customers is doing is bringing in the jobs feeds from all of the people in their ecosystem, the partners, the customers, the vendors, and saying, look, we can't find you a job here, but maybe we can find you a great role at one of our customers or one of our partners. The key being, how do we just find you a job? The best job we can possibly find you, whether it's with us or not. And there's some data that says, actually, you're more valuable at a customer than you are with us, because you're going to be there, you're going to be an advocate, you're going to do all the, you know, waving the flag. So you're starting to see this past few months really reshape what it means to engage people at a very human level, more than just, hey, do you want to be just added to our talent community? And every time there's a job, we're going to send you an email. That's not what an alumni platform is. This is about, how can we deliver you value? What are you looking for? And in return, potentially, you might have some goodwill and deliver value back to the organization.
So as an entrepreneur myself, I look at what you're doing. I think it's a cool platform. But I know what it's like to sell a cool platform and to go into a prospect who just doesn't get it. And they look at it and they say, how much does it cost? Now, when somebody says, how much does it cost? They don't buy in.
Yeah, you're dead.
So how do your loyal customers value the investment rather than the cost of this? What are the kinds of things that they're saying to you that resonate with engaging, using this tool to engage long-term with people who, not by their choice, but by acts of God and other circumstances, they had to furlough.
Yeah, I mean, we have to put all of the conditions into the same bucket to a certain extent. Whatever that reason is that you're no longer employed at the company, we have to satisfy and ensure the platform delivers value to you. In the same way, we have to deliver value across five generations, everyone from an intern to a retiree. We can't treat everyone the same, and we can't believe everyone has the same motives or interests. And I think that's kind of the first start of this big conversation, is recognizing everyone is very unique.
You know, my wife is a school teacher. She teaches gifted kids, and she's on Zoom all the time. And while she's retaining a paycheck, in many ways, it feels like she's out of work. And the community works to basically reassure each other. And they do talk about skill assessment, not skill assessment, but a skill enrichment all the time. And I agree with you. It really does help keep somebody engaged and vital, even if they're not full-time working for an organization. I wanted to pivot to a different type of question, and we talked about this in pre-interview. 2020 was bad enough with a pandemic, and then came mass unemployment. But now last week, or rather in the last 2 weeks, we now have a lot of protests going on because of what happened in Minneapolis with George Floyd. This is not 1968. It's 2020, and I think probably 3 out of 4 people in this country feel some semblance of outrage out of what they've seen and what they've experienced. Many of us want to drive some purpose from what we do in our daily lives, and certainly from the companies where we work, and we want those companies to reflect those kinds of social conscious values and reflect their outrage so that work is a proponent for societal good. This part feels like a bigger driver in the workforce engagement paradigm. What are your thoughts on that, James?
I think number one is, I totally agree with you. It's, you know, there is a, we had a conversation this morning with a number of alumni leaders that said, the conversation was, what is our responsibility as leaders? And what is our responsibility as a platform? How can we take this passion, amplify it, and ensure we can implement and affect change? But I think what it leads to is the changing face of an employee. Mm-hmm. There is no work-life balance. What I care about at home, I care about at work. What I care about at work, I care about at home. And this is not for me to define what's important to you. To some people, it's just earn as much money as I can to pay my mortgage and put my kid in a private school. To others, it's around diversity. To others, it's around community impact and what it stands for. But the key is taking stock of what's important to that individual as an employee and ensuring that there is a model for that employee to flourish, to take some of that passion and put it into their organization. I think one of the things companies forget about, they have a lot of learning, they have a lot of health and wellness and how are you checks and Qualtrics net promoter scores and all of these bits and pieces. But one of the things that they haven't done that we've started to see is tell you, hey, take a moment and take stock of your life. Where are you? Where do you want to be? And how do we help you get there? And I think that is going to be something we're going to see out of this kind of whole new wave of talent. You can't just implement a health and wellness scheme across your company and assume everyone's going to be healthy and well. Instead, you've actually got to teach people the skills that you have to learn before you learn competencies. You can't just throw a curriculum and a syllabus at them. You first have to teach people how to learn, teach people how to progress. So we're starting to see people ask those questions. What do you want to do? What makes you happy? What makes you excited? What would make you, you know, be invigorated in this organization? I mean, you and I talked about that example. I think it was your colleague from GE who at home is part of the maker community building PPE. And I've talked about that every day since you and I talked, which is there are pockets of people in every organization doing some of the most amazing things, just waiting for their organization to say, hey, what are you working on? What's your passion project? What keeps you up at 2 a.m.?
Yeah, and that colleague is actually my nephew.
And oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, sorry, I forgot it, that.
It's quite all right. And I think the fact that he's doing all these things makes him a more valuable member of GE, because they're valuing his time to do, like you say, his passion projects. He's involved in the makers movement where he lives. And they're responding to the COVID crisis by creating PPE for communities that are in need of it in real time, which is really cool.
And you can't train passion. passion is just is. And so when someone finds something they're passionate about, I mean, we've had this big conversation, which is when you start thinking about kind of how you're hiring in the organization, why are you hiring for competencies? Hire for the core skills under the competency and train the competency. So hire for someone that's analytical, that's mechanical, that has all of these core attributes, that is a good team player, that gets passionate and gets excited, gets too excited. And we're starting to see more of these diverse teams be put together inside of organizations. The flattening of the organization, diverse teams, and people saying, hey, what excites you? And I think this is a really important time that companies can take to take stock of that, because we're seeing what's important to most people, which is equality, social justice, the things that are, and it's not to say that it's important to everybody and everybody has the same, you know, number one hierarchy of needs. It's just to say that people are becoming more and more honest about what they want and what they expect. And that's a great thing.
And you mentioned the whole idea about the workday, the work-life balance, which is total mishigas. I mean, who cares about that?
Right.
The day is the day. I just happen to work during parts of it. And how I use it, you know, at 2 o'clock, my child is playing soccer somewhere. I'm going to take an hour and be present in their lives. And then I'll come back and I'll work. And I may work till 2 o'clock in the morning, but I'll give you a quality output. But don't measure my value based on time.
Yeah, we've seen that whole kind of BS, you know, burning the lamp and your manager kind of seeing you working late. That's gone. I think everyone agrees that's gone. I mean, we've got an amazing customer bank on the East Coast, and their digital transformation went from, you know, a 10-year program to, you know, June, essentially. And everything about them has been around process and structure and risk management. And overnight, they're now on Slack and they're on Zoom. And I spoke to my colleague over there and he said, the entire workforce is re-energized. We have all the tools we've always wanted that we've always heard about people are using. And it turns out they're as good as people said they were. And we love it. And we are now more productive, more excited. I'm living my best life type of thing. And this is a guy I've spoken to, you know, almost every other week for about 3 years. And I'm seeing a whole new person who's excited because his company is now empowering him to kind of do him and to work the way that works for him. And in return, we're seeing amazing results, exactly as you said, whether it's going to soccer for your kid, whether it's, you know, I prefer to start a bit later and work a bit later. All of these things are companies' ability to say, hey, what do I have to do to get peak performance out of you?
You offered up a couple of questions when we spoke last week that I've never heard a hiring manager ask a hired talent. And the first is, what is your purpose? It sounds like it's out of Monty Python, but it's actually a, you know, what is your quest? The second is, when you leave in 2 years, what do you expect to do? What happens, James, when hiring managers ask these questions? And can asking these questions help talent when they get furloughed?
No one wants to ask a question if you don't want the answer. And the reality is, I understand that to a lot of people, they stay away from questions and topics that they just don't want the answer to because they need to fill a space. And there are plenty of jobs where you just need a ditch digger to dig a ditch and to have skills in ditch digging, if that makes sense. So some jobs just require a functional, just do this. But for us, you know, we're a small organization, but one of the first questions I ask in an interview is exactly that. When you leave us in 2 years, what is the job you're gonna have? And the reason I ask it is twofold. Number one is because very rarely someone has asked someone that, and so they haven't had a chance to reflect. And so I don't force them to answer there and then, but I provide guidance. Is it headcount? Is it leadership? Is it, you know, a senior role? What is it that you think you want to be there in 2, 4, 10 years? And I think it's really important for organizations to teach people how to create a career plan. It's so easy to get busy at work that you forget about your career plan and you just kind of hope it just falls upstairs. That's what you're hoping for. You fall upstairs, earn more money, get a bigger job title, when actually you have to self-manage that process. But the second reason I do it is it lets me know exactly what I need to do to keep that employee. You know, I really believe that retention is a privilege, not a right. Therefore, it is the responsibility of our organization to be building people towards their ultimate goals. So in 2 years or 3 years, I can go back and say, okay, the goal was within 2 or 3 years, you would have X, Y, and Z. We've done that. You know, what's your next plan? What's the next thing we want to do? What's the next role? And we won't always have the role for people. You know, we're a small organization, so there are going to be times where we can't give you headcount. But we can do everything to train you into that. So when you go to your next job, you're going to the next job because of us, not in spite of us. And so we treat leaving as inevitable. We like talking about it. We like discussing it. And the more you make it less of a thing, the more suddenly being an alumni is actually a positive conversation as opposed to a weird conversation.
That's got to be wonderfully liberating for talent.
I check in usually a few weeks after we hire people and I say, did we represent ourselves correctly? I really believe the interview process is for the future prospect to understand our organization.
I'm really encouraged by what you're saying. For a good portion of my recruiting years, my 20 years in recruiting, I think candidates were conditioned to divine what the hiring manager wanted from them and parrot it back so that the hiring manager feels, perfect. And you got a pleaser. And that doesn't always work out.
You've also got to train people what it means to have, to be relaxed, to drop your shoulders, to have freedom at work, to have freedom to have a voice. And you've got to do that from the very first second you meet someone. You've got to enable people to be able to drop their resume face, if that's a fair sentence, and be the person they want to be and they are, and to let them know that's what we want. We want diverse opinions. I'll take a passionate engineer that's earlier in their career, better than a mid-level engineer any day of the week. I love passionate people that are just going to be excited. And I have to tell people, look, at some point you're going to have to do really crappy work because sometimes, again, you just got to dig a ditch. But it's imperative for us that our staff represent our mission as an organization, but more importantly, represent the mission of the product we're selling. We're telling these large organizations, maintain a relationship with your alumni, be human, have empathy, and you're going to get this tremendous value out of it. And so you can't build a product that has those tenets of communication, collaboration, empathy, all of those buzzwords without actually living it as an organization. And so, you know, you asked a question earlier that I kind of skimmed off, which was the KPI and the business case, because the business case starts with, is this the right thing to do for our people? And I know that's not a business case. I know no one has ever got budget based on that sentence. Then we can talk about the fact that, I mean, I was on a webinar with Citi and EY 2 weeks ago, and EY, 17% of their employees are alumni or alumni referrals. Citi is, 12%. And Citi said they think the number of the dollar savings, $75,000 per boomerang hire, per person that comes back. So the business case for alumni is just overwhelming. The only question is whether or not a company actually has a little bit of the guts to say, you know what, we've got to change some of our habits. Instead of hiring strangers and looking through a million interviews from Indeed and resumes, why don't we find someone we already know? We know they're going to be great. We know what excites them. We know their passion, and they want to come back.
What's really interesting, and you mentioned it a little before, I call it skill-based volunteerism. I would imagine the companies like EY, they're using their talent. I know Deloitte has a gold standard program of doing skill-based volunteerism, Target as well. But a lot of these programs are driven by somebody in a central management position to kind of move the company along. What excites me about your platform is it gives frontline managers the ability to engage with their talent on a personal level and allow their talent to respond to something in real time as a skill-based volunteer. And then that becomes part of their work story, their work value story. They're not getting paid for it, maybe, but it falls under this umbrella of the good value that comes out of this alumni relationship.
Yeah, and look, you can't pay a mortgage with smiles and high fives.
Indeed.
But you can have a better life, have a happier life, and talk about it. And we have a lot of our companies, not everyone does it for recruiting. So the numbers around recruiting are overwhelming. The only question for an organization that doesn't do it is why not? And very often it's because the person making the decision isn't in there for the long term. You know, that's why it does take an executive sponsor. If you look at all the very successful programs, they do come from someone in a senior leadership position who says, I know it's going to take a few minutes to get this rolling. You know, we're not going to open it up today and hire 20% of our workforce tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But when those are enrolled and when those are happening, you're absolutely right. The frontline get to have this communication and conversation and get to ask a question. And the one piece of data I can tell you we got from this year's kind of survey was almost 80% of former employees would return back to the organization in some way. That is just an overwhelmingly large number. But what it's going to take is a readjustment of how we think about recruiting. If you are waiting for someone to knock on your door, to log into your careers portal, to upload a resume, you are going to grow some cobwebs. Instead, you've got to make it easy for passive candidates who are highly skilled, who want to come back, to be able to just raise their hand and say, I'm interested. And that's the extent of what a passive candidate should have to do to start the relationship, I think.
Well, they already know the culture. That's a huge advantage for them over a recruited candidate. And I say that at my own detriment as a former headhunter.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we talked about, you know, what does this mean to headhunters and to recruiters and to executive search firms? And I talked about this the other day. The answer is, this is complementary. And the reason why it's complementary is the great thing that recruiters do is recruiters find the diamonds in the rough. Mm-hmm. You know, the recruiters, I mean, for me, and I can't talk for all of them, and I'm sure you've got a perspective, but recruiters find the diverse opinion we hadn't considered. The person who perhaps on face value on their resume we haven't thought matches the role. For us, I've always seen the recruiters are able to, because they have that personal relationship of saying, well, sec, I know Julie. Let me tell you a little bit about her. And then tell me about her skills and tell me about those things. But one of the greatest hires we made was someone who's very junior. We thought was very junior, and she wasn't. She just undersold herself, and she didn't know how to represent it. And the recruiter rang and said, I'm telling you, bring this lady in. She's unbelievable. And she was. And we offered a job on the spot because she's brilliant. She's amazing. And because she's earlier in her career, she hadn't quite crafted the right resume with the right keywords to get us to say, oh, this is the candidate we want. You cannot replace that human from that conversation of understanding what drives someone who's going to be a good fit. And so, you know, for us, this is about the 20% of the workforce, the recruiters, the referrals, the business development, the sales. Even a great example, one of our customers right now has no ad spend. And so they are leveraging their alumni community and saying, hey, please like and share our content and our thought leadership organically, because we're spending no money on our AdWords or our LinkedIn ads right now. So whatever the view is, if you liked your former employer and they've delivered value to you and they asked you, hey, do you mind like or sharing this? Your answer is going to be yes, because it's a relationship. It's a community.
This is going to be the year of worker empowerment. Even though so many are sidelined right now, I think that the future of work is being written right now. And why is it being written? Well, we just went through a pandemic and we're still in it. And it won't be the last of them. We're going to go through a series of culture shocks and future shocks and things like that. Because of that, I'm sensing that our workforce is going to need to be an agile workforce, that everything about a person who engages with work is going to be valued based on their agility to respond to quick changes and even quicker opportunities. Do I have that right?
So I love that, because I think it goes kind of full circle to hire based on agility, hire based on resilience, hire based on adaptability, hire based on core human skills, because you can train on top of that. You can train hot skills, core skills on top of that in a majority of the time. I absolutely agree. I think this is the year where employees recognize that it is a relationship and it is an equal relationship. If anything, it's an employer actually led relationship. So I say equal, but it's not. I mean, we believe it's a 49%, 51%. We have to give more than we take if we want to retain and cultivate our talent. And I think companies are realizing, and they're now going to have to follow through on their hashtags, on their statements, and they're going to actually have to follow through and deliver on that, because people are going to want to work at the companies that during this moment, and this moment being everything about 2020, did the right thing. Because this is going to be, you know, it's all about, and you know, without getting too deep, the wrong side of history, right side of history. But the companies that took care of their employees that were furloughed, I mean, we have one CEO, and I've talked about this a few times, that every week he does a town hall with all of his laid off tens of thousands of people. Here's what's happening. Here's what's going on in the market. Here's what you should be aware of. Here's what we're thinking for recovery. Also, here are some tools. Here are some people with job openings. Here are some things we're doing. That is a CEO where every one of those people that were laid off are cheering at the end of it for a guy that literally laid them off, because he knows how to be a leader. And that is a leader that everyone looks at and says, ha, I want to work for him. And they do.
I got sidelined because you had to save the company. But in that same token, a leader will say, I want to keep you engaged because hopefully this is temporary and I value you and I want to bring you back in some capacity.
Yeah. And you can have a business case, or you can say, I want to be engaged because this is really shitty. And right. It's our duty and our obligation as an organization to say, we have more power, resources, people, stuff, things to be able to perhaps help you during this time. You know, and it might not be all the things you want, cash. It might be the other things, but that's okay too. Whether it's, you know, you're saying, I want to do an MBA program and your former employee is saying, we will co-sponsor, we'll pay for it. Where in the world would an organization pay for the learning and education of someone they just laid off? In a world where they realize that you're coming back because you're going to like this organization, you're going to go out, you're going to get some new skills, new opinions, new networks, new whatever, and you're going to come back because the grass isn't greener. And I think companies who know that are putting their eggs in a basket and saying, let's just deliver excellence across the board. And my final point around that is something I think the Starbucks CHRO said, which is treat everyone like a customer. Everyone like your best customer, period. And the best way to represent that for me is if you walked into the BMW dealership and you said, look, thank you for showing me the car. I'm actually going to buy a Mercedes. The rep has two choices. Either get out, you wasted my time. I'm not getting commission and you've wasted all of this. Or congratulations, it's an amazing car. We wish you health and happiness. I'm going to ping you in 3 years when your lease is up. Are you okay with that? You have two choices. And that's how we think about every action people have with an organization. Would you do this to your greatest customer? And if the answer is yes, amazing. If the answer is no, change it, period.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, I ran an episode of the Tightrope Podcast with my lifelong best friend, Stu Katz. And we talked about what being at summer camp meant to us now over 50 years since we first became friends at summer camp. And the glue that holds us all together is our alumni group. We have a ragtag bunch of over 500 people. But within that bunch of people are some rock stars, you know, people that I go to if I'm not well, if I need legal advice, if I need ideas for my podcast, whatever it might be, they are people I trust. I would imagine that is the enduring value of your platform. If you do it right, if your clients do it right, you now have an ecosystem that pays dividends well beyond that person leaving your company.
Finding your tribe. I think that's what life is about. Finding your tribe. I totally agree with you. I, you know, one of my first jobs, I still know three or four people that started the same day as me. We all started at the same place at the same time. And every time we talk, I think we talk about the same story every single year. Every time we talk to each other, I think we still laugh at the same idiot thing that Tim did on his first day where he nearly brought down everything. But the point being is those are the moments that connect us, finding your tribe around things that are important. And it doesn't necessarily have to be meaningful work. And that's it. It goes back to your point, skills-based volunteering. You know, one of the things some companies can do is match your donations. That might be important to you. Other things they can do is help you with mentoring, is help you with learning. There's so many resources these large organizations have. If you just think about the intranets of these large organizations and imagine just opening it up and saying, you can access this. That's the biggest thing people miss, is access to the stuff and the things of this tremendous organization. So they've now gone to a new organization like, oh, what was that one PowerPoint I once saw last year when I was there that I could grab? That's why people take their files with them. That's why people take their stuff with them, because, oh, this company had an amazing way to encapsulate the conversation points. So they're not leaving with a big, you know, get out of my life. They're leaving and taking stuff with them. That's a compliment. And so how do you maintain and provide them that continued access to the things they loved about your organization?
Let me ask you a question. Were you ever laid off in your career?
Yes, I was laid off from my first job. It was in fast food. I was told I wasn't management potential. He was right.
I got laid off on my birthday. Can you imagine? Oh. And it was in advertising. And, you know, it was for a lot of reasons, the biggest of which is my company was going through a consolidation and I was expensive. But when I got cast off, it felt like I was at my own funeral. It was horrible. Because I knew I was going to be severed from these people that I had grown to love. What you've done here is really remarkable, because at the end of a working relationship, you want to know that you are transiting to your next chapter with all the friendships and relationships of the past still intact and leverageable. And I think back to my time almost 30 years ago when this first happened to me. And I was traumatized. I didn't want to get up out of bed. I was not eating. I wasn't sleeping. And to know that you are still part of the family has to be, from a health and wellness standpoint, a huge, huge driver.
Why would you do it any other way? You know, we have one company where a manager, when someone leaves his organization or his team and goes to another company, 2 weeks later, sends them a box of cookies with a card that says, we miss you. However, we hope you're doing amazingly. If you need anything from us or our team, we will always support you throughout your career. And I was like, what? Like, A, how do you, like, I couldn't wrap my head around the fact that that is just, I was like, is that a company program? And he was like, no. He's like, it's the right thing to do. These are people, this person might be my boss in 5 years. He's like, people misunderstand. The world is moving so fast. You have no idea where stuff is going to intersect. And if you don't treat every relationship like gold dust, then you're literally throwing your minutes away. And it's so true. And so I take a really a lot of wisdom from him, because I was like, that is just such an amazing thing to do. Why wouldn't I check in with someone a few weeks later? And so we've actually implemented that in our platform, a way that when someone leaves, automatically a little bit later, it checks in. How are you doing? Anything we can help you with? What can we do? Best of luck. And yes, it's automated. Yes, it comes from a robot, but it does make people smile, because it's just a recognition that you left, but you didn't leave. If that makes sense.
And who doesn't like cookies?
and also cookies. Yeah. Right. And even if you hated the organization, I mean, you talked about Target. Target offer, I think it's a 7% discount to all of their alumni at the stores. So it doesn't matter how much you disliked leaving, you're still going to sign up for their alumni program, because 7% is 7%. And no one has ever got out of Target without, you know, spending at least three digits. You know, you walk in for a battery, and you walk out with a car full of stuff. So organizations have things that aren't always driven by your relationship or your employment, whether that is a discount, whether that is access to something, whether that's thought leadership. And Target can now rebuild any relationship. Maybe you did leave because you didn't like your manager. Maybe you did leave because you didn't find that next role. And I think people forget about that. They're like, oh, you always leave because you didn't like your manager. Maybe you weren't ready for that next job, to be honest. Maybe that's why you didn't get it. And that's okay as well.
My parents' generation thought that they would have one career track in their life. It would have a beginning, a middle, and an end with a gold watch and a retirement party. I'm going to be 60 next year. I am already into my fourth career act. And I think that is going to be the norm for a lot of people, certainly for your generation and the generations to follow, James. And I think how we keep work meaningful is by doing what your clients are doing, is encouraging people to, like you said, in so many words, take ownership of your career story and be able to articulate where you want to be in 2 years, which is great. On the idea of meaningful work, now we call meaningful work work that's profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do. And I want to know from you, how do we keep the work that we do meaningful? What are your thoughts on that?
So I have two. The first is, I love your concept about, you know, job for life. There was a phrase I heard the other day that I think is so applicable. It's, my dad had one job for life. I'm going to have four jobs in my life. My kid has four jobs right now. I think that's part of meaningful. Meaningful is the ability to try, test, explore. I've always told every organization or individual that I've mentored, have a side gig. Have a side gig, because it will open up your network. It will open up your opportunities. You're going to find something that you're passionately excited about, whatever that might be. But ultimately, the only way to make work meaningful is, it's got to be meaningful to both parties. You know, if you're saving the world but hating it, then it's not meaningful. And there are plenty of saving the world jobs that I don't want to do. I don't want to be in the middle of the ocean cleaning it up, because I'd like quite like to be with my family here. So there's plenty of roles that can be meaningful to the earth, but not to me as an individual. So I really think it's about this relationship of, you've got to find your purpose. And again, your purpose can still include earning money, buying a house, private school, whatever those things are. And you can still talk about it. And I think that's the first step. Talk about it. Be okay with it. And the more you talk about it, the less it's a thing. The more you talk about leaving a company, the less of a thing it becomes when you do leave. And the more it becomes, amazing, we can't wait to see you back here soon. I think it's British Airways that when a senior executive leaves, the letter they write says, good luck with your offsite training. We'll see you back here in a couple of years.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And yeah, and that's just human. Can you imagine a company doing that 20 years ago?
No.
Like, it's crazy. Crazy.
Oh, don't let the door smack you in the ass when you leave was 20 years ago.
You're a traitor. This is treasonous. We might kill you. You know, we might sue you before you even get there, just to make sure you don't go there. Like, it's gone from that concept to literally, we know we're a great employer. You'll come back, and we can't wait for it.
Listen, I work for one of those Lord of the Flies companies, and the guy basically said to me, I don't want to talk to you again. Then I became a recruiter. Guess who called me? I'm out of a job. Can you help me? And I'm like, well, I don't know.
People who don't realize your net worth is your network, and I hate to use a coiny phrase, I think it's a title of a book, but it just is. Every relationship and everything you do in your life is leading to your network, and you just have no idea how it's all going to come together. And people who essentially ruin those relationships are just are hurting themselves. They're the only people being hurt by it. You'll be fine. You're going to do great. It's going to be me that, you know, was spiteful or had hate around it, or said, never talk to me again. It's going to come back to me, because when I lose my job and come to you and say help, you're going to be like, yeah, let me show you the one side of the door.
And the training and the empowerment that comes out of the tools that you offer enable really enterprising talent to own their authority of their thought leadership. And that to me is critical, because I think to have this kind of work relationship where I might be a hybrid who's got a day job and a side hustle, I might have a bunch of side hustles, I might have a few side hustles and some nonprofit endeavors that I'm doing. But at the end of the day, my elevator pitch is, this is what I do, and I do really well, and I'm passionate about it.
And by the way, go speak to my 900 people I've impacted, because this is my army right behind me. And I think that's the final sentence. This is my army. And that's what people need. If you want to, you know, create change, you need an army. You need to look over your shoulders and know you're supported and you've got people there. And so training, education, learning, whatever it is, I think the conversation around meaningful work is just, how do we make you happy? And if we make you happy, it will pay dividends back to the organization. They've just got to work out how to put a KPI on it. That's the trouble with organizations. How do we put that into a bar chart?
Right. James, this has been so much fun. If we were to point listeners of this episode to your thought leadership and also to Enterprise Alumni social media, how would we do that?
Thank you. So I'm hugely accessible. If people have conversations, thoughts, want to continue the conversation, no shock. I love having it. You can find me on all the socials, LinkedIn, Twitter, and doodads. Otherwise, enterprisealumni.com has pretty much everything about us and what we're doing, and we'd love to hear from people. It's not only people who are like, ooh, I need an alumni program. It's people who are thinking, what does the future of work look like? And how can you have a full employee experience without thinking about how people leave? So this is not, you know, if you're a customer, phone us. This is, if you have an idea or a conversation, we want to have it and we want to be in the right conversations.
This is great. And I hope we get you back on at in March 246, because we haven't left the month of March 2020 yet.
Exactly.
Thank you for walking the tightrope with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Links to James Sinclair's and Enterprise Alumni social media are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who walk the tightrope to seek and do meaningful work. You can subscribe to us where you get your podcasts or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. Together, let's walk the tightrope to find and do meaningful work. For the future of work is meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.